Blog Talk Radio.
Again, it is Monday evening, and that can only mean it is time for the worst show in sports. We've even gone beyond the worst show in soccer. We are now the worst show in sports. That's right. It is the Two Guys Soccer Show. I'm Mike. He's dead. How you doing this weekend?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm doing great. As always, we are brought to you by Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. Stead, we got more fan mail this weekend.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. We got our first message.
You sure
please
it's fan
stop.
Mail?
Our first one, please stop. Number two, idiots. And the third one was, you guys suck. So, yep, winning friends and influencing people.
All right. I'm not sure you'd call that fan mail. Constitutes as mail, but I wouldn't call those people actually fans. But we'll see. Maybe we can change them.
I hope it was sarc. We'll trust it, sir. So, on a week where an NFL quarterback missed a play because he was taking a selfie, we talk soccer.
Absolutely.
So, normally we start off... I was looking over some of the MLS pre-draft, the MLS end-of-season stuff today, and they had the waiver draft this afternoon, and I was looking over the waived players, and there was a name that jumped out at me. Actually, there were a couple, but one that caught me in particular was a young man who we had a lot of hopes for, a former Arsenal player who apparently had been under contract with Sporting Kansas City, found his contract not picked up, then Gideon Zalalem.
Wow.
And he was waived this season and not claimed in the draft, so he'll become a free agent. And it was just kind of a reminder, first of, wow, I had forgotten about that. Because remember, he was like the big hype. He was supposed to be Christian Pulisic before Christian Pulisic was
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it seems like he's been around for long enough that we've forgotten that he's still playing, but he's only 22 years old.
Yeah, he's relatively local too. I know he spent kind of like his high school years in the DC area. But he never really could seem to catch on. It seems like there's a couple of Freddie Adu viruses floating around here, but he did, you know, Arsenal seemed to have hopes for him. They had him on their squad for 5 years, and he just couldn't seem to ever get on the field, and nothing caught on. You know, spent some time at Rangers as well. But I'm a bit shocked that he's now just floating in the wind. But I don't know. We'll see what's going to happen with him. I mean, I'm sure things can change once we get a little bit closer to January. But, you know, we'll see. I definitely had high hopes for him. Not so much necessarily he was going to be a breakout player for Arsenal, but I thought that type of exposure would at least get him some European opportunities and boost his performances so he could be a featured member for the national team. But that doesn't seem like that's going the way it's planned. I mean, kind of like Julian Green, except you know, Julian Green still managing to hang on with a Bundesliga 2 squad.
I kind of think for Gideon, the future is going to be in USL. He was down on – he was signed to Kansas City. He was loaned out, I guess, for the second half of the season to Swope Park Rangers, where he only featured 9 times and didn't score a goal. And it's kind of scary to think that at 22, his career, which at one point was promising and he was getting favorable comparisons to Cesc Fabregas,
mm-hmm.
could be done over. You know,
yeah.
I would say that even in a position of relative need in the center of midfield, he's out of running for the U.S. men's national team. I can't see, short of a bang-up season or two at USL, which then gets him picked up by MLS, and he makes a really remarkable recovery. I can't see him getting on the field, and it was supposed to be the 2022 World Cup, which was really supposed to be his breakout
mm-hmm.
season
mm-hmm.
where he took over. You know, he had the nasty ACL injury, what was it, 2 seasons ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it just never seemed to be able to get back on the field. And they say availability is the best ability, but
yeah. Yeah, well, you got to wonder, what were they seeing in him as a youngster, which caused all this attention? I mean, he also spent significant time playing in the German youth system, and suiting up for the German U15, U16, and U17s. So the kid clearly had something. So it's just a bit surprising that at this point, so early, as you said, he's only 22, to could already be looking at the rear end of his professional career. So. I don't know. It could very well be an injury. I mean, you've seen that time and time again, especially something like an Achilles for a soccer player could really, really limit their mobility, especially laterally. And next thing you know, they're unable to keep up with the pace of the game, especially as they get older and expected to move into more professional ranks. So I don't really know what they're going to do. I mean, I feel for the guy. I do. I mean, hopefully he just needs a couple more, as you said, a couple seasons to maybe get stronger. But I mean, he was never the biggest guy. He's pretty skinny, so
mm-hmm.
that could also be just an issue of the fact he just doesn't have the body for it.
I guess the larger question was this idea that some of these guys, they get so hyped as kids, and then the injury hit to the
mm-hmm.
development plateau.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, he could have hit his peak at 15. You know, that could have been his. He could have been like, he's already as tall as he's going to be. He's always as heavy as he's going to be, you know, and that'll be it.
But then they just so quickly get passed by.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike the Freddie Adu scenario where, you know, he hung on for a while. A while.
Yeah.
And got opportunity after opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, well, he was the great player that never was. I don't even think that we're going to get the think piece in 10 years as to where is Gideon Zalalem now.
Uh-huh.
Like, and it's just proof that the sport moves really quickly because
yeah.
I had completely forgotten about him until I saw his name on this list, and I was like, huh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I didn't know he was back. I mean, I knew he was back in MLS, but yeah, I didn't really have too much to say about keeping up with his career. You know, yeah, he definitely fizzled out after a while. I was really checking his stats and his Wikipedia page for updates every other week, and now I can't say I've even thought about it in the past year and a half. So yeah, he really fizzled out quickly.
Among other names that were available in the waiver draft. One of your favorite players, Bakary Sagna.
Yeah.
Nico Gaitán, who was another one, really great midfielder for Benfica, who went to China and then ended up with Chicago Fire. He went undrafted.
Mm-hmm.
And the brother of Paul Pogba, Florentine Pogba.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I feel for him. What must it
mm-hmm.
be like? You're Paul Pogba's brother, and
mm-hmm.
you just got by an MLS team.
You know, he can't go back home, man. He can't go. He's going to get ragged too hard. I believe he was on the DRC national squad for a little bit, but I don't think he's invited to that camp anymore either.
And he was on last season he was signed with Atlanta. A couple of seasons ago, he was on Saint Etienne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because he played mm-hmm. against Paul in the Europa League.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it's not even that you can't catch on in Europe. You can't even catch on in the MLS.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, but you know, MLS is coming. That's what they want you to believe, right? They're going to be a top 10 league pretty soon. They came out taking all the bums. And
meanwhile,
I do feel for Bakary Sagna. Granted, he is 36, and he had a great professional career. He's going on 37, so he has no. I mean, he'd be fine to hang it up and go hang out with his stunningly beautiful wife and just enjoy himself. He made plenty of money playing for Arsenal.
Well, that he's the other end of the spectrum. You know, Bakary Sagna had a fantastic career, made lots of money, played in some of the top leagues in Europe, was a key player for Arsenal for a long time. He did all right.
He did all right.
Out two extra seasons playing in Canada. Full credit to him. I hope you enjoyed the ride. It was good.
Yeah.
A guy on the other end, like Zalalem, who's using this as an opportunity to perhaps make a career, I feel more for him because it's like, man, you know, just how it has to peak at, like you said, 17 years old.
Yeah.
You're at Arsenal being talked about as a potential replacement for Cesc Fabregas and a key part of Arsene Wenger's team to now searching for another squad after having been cut from a USL team. How it goes from, you know, he played in an FA Cup game for Arsenal.
And he played in League Cup games too, played in four of them. Yeah.
From playing at the Emirates to playing for Swope Park Rangers. Can you even find Swope Park on a map for me? I imagine it's someplace in Missouri, but I'm not 100% sure.
Look, I haven't heard of that club so much that when I just saw when he went there, I just assumed it was Queens Park Rangers. I didn't even know there was a Smoke Park Rangers. Never even heard of it.
It's the minor league USL affiliate Sporting KC.
Right.
But I'm not sure where it's located. I'm guessing in Missouri or someplace like that, but not 100% sure. And even though I co-host a soccer show, it is not even worth it right now for me to get on the iPad and look up where it is.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I didn't even click on their Wikipedia link.
So, we'll be joined in a little bit by Carlos Rosali, who does Tottenham for us, to talk about the big news of the week. And I just want to express my displeasure at Spurs and Daniel Levy for their actions of last week. And let it be known how upset, how disappointed, how apoplectically mad I am that they could not make the decision to relieve Maurizio Pochettino of his duties 24 hours earlier so we could talk about it on Monday.
Exactly.
How conceivably inconsiderate can you be to deny a relatively unknown podcast in the United States an opportunity to talk about this?
Yep.
And I am 100% convinced that he pulled it up on his computer and said, you know what? Nah, I'm going to waive it, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What was that, man? What is your take on that? I've flip-flopped quite a bit on this whole move. I've really flip-flopped on it. But one good thing about it is it's given me 6 days to really ponder my response, because while we are a little bit late as far as when we're going to be discussing this move, it is still completely relevant because, as you can see, yeah, just by typing in Jose Mourinho, everything's popping up still about this move, and you still see Pochettino's name in every single search you have for Jose Mourinho. So, I'm gonna save my. I'm sure. I'll kind of want to hear from you, but I'm sure we're probably gonna think similarly on this.
I was a bit taken aback initially by the timing.
Mm-hmm.
I understand from the later reports that they had tried throughout the international break to get him to resign, ostensibly so that they could not have to pay the 12 million pounds that's still owed to him.
Mm-hmm.
I was very surprised that they decided to wait until the Tuesday before a Saturday game to do this. It was clear to me that negotiations with Jose had been ongoing, because you can't make that hire that quickly afterwards unless you've already engaged in negotiations with him.
Mm-hmm.
Given the money that they are paying, I think the contract is worth up to $30 million for Jose
mm-hmm.
to come on board, tells me that they really saw him as the person that they wanted and were willing to do something for the manager that they had not done for the team, which is to stump up big money and
mm-hmm.
big contract money.
Mm-hmm. What stumps me about this whole thing too, though, is Spurs have been pretty vocal about how they aren't going to be spending a whole lot of money. Granted, they did spend a lot of money this past offseason. They did. So, but I thought, you know, this doesn't make any sense. You still have one of the best coaches in the world. I understand he's going through a bit of a slump right now, but come on, he took a team that probably was punching above its weight last season to a Champions League final, and they had a legitimate shot at winning. But then you think about it, well, Poch hasn't won anything, though. I mean, he had a little bit of that, kind of that David Moyes where everyone thinks he's a really great manager, even though they had nothing to show for it. And granted, he was there much less time. But still, it just seemed like you're going to go with Mourinho, who all the pundits on TV are talking about how he's going to torpedo the team and everything, and all he's going to do is get you a League Cup, this, that, and the other. But then on the flip side, though, Spurs need to win a trophy. I mean, they've been in the conversation for quite a long time. And I can think of Spurs fans for years talking about how they're going to overtake Arsenal. They're going to overtake Arsenal. They're going to overtake Arsenal. And then the season that they did, I had this guy I know who was just ribbing me about it until Arsenal won the FA Cup that season. So I just looked at him and I said, being awfully quiet today, because those same fans who said nobody really cares about the FA Cup, no, I'm pretty sure you wanted your team to win. You wanted your team to bring home a trophy. So now I'm going, well, what does Jose Mourinho do? He'll win you a trophy. He'll get you a League Cup, maybe even an FA Cup. He'll get you a Europa League. I mean, say what you want about his time at Manchester City or Manchester United, you got two trophies out of it. You got two trophies. And it's nothing to scoff at. They won the tournament that Arsenal was supposed to win last year with Unai Emery and got spanked by Chelsea. So this might not be such a bad thing in Spurs' long-term plans if they're trying to, you know, get a little bit more of a global following. And how better to do that than to win some championships, to win some trophies, to get a cup final, because a lot of these TV stations overseas are only going to air the final, just to get you a little bit more exposure. Who gets exposure? Who has some of the best press conferences around? It's Jose Mourinho. So while I don't know what the long-term impacts on the club are going to be, it seems, though, like in the short term, this might not be such a bad move and might work out in Spurs' favor if they're able to win some sort of trophy, and they might even do it this year. The guy knows how to get to finals. He knows how to win. Yes, it's going to be an extraordinarily boring final, but if I was a Spurs fan, I would be nervous, but at least I would feel like, you know what, though, we're probably going to get a trophy out of it.
We happen to, I believe, have somebody on the line who can answer that question exactly. Carlos, you there?
I'm here.
Hello,
Happy
Carlos.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you,
Thanksgiving
too.
Thanksgiving to you, too, sir. Before I chime in, how are you feeling today about this?
About this. That's You mean the Mourinho taking over, or the fact that the Spurs won, or the fact that the Spurs haven't won a cup, or which this do you want me to talk about?
The whole situation. Talk
everything.
About how are you feeling as a Spurs fan on this Monday?
Optimistic is how we're feeling. I mean, to be totally honest, the whole speculation about Mourinho taking over had been something I had heard about over the last couple of months. And I'm like, no, why are they looking for a coach? They got Pochettino. The players like Pochettino. The fans like Pochettino. He hasn't got over the hump. But, I mean, you're talking a guy who is consistent over the last four seasons, top five finishes. It's amazing what he's done to, you know, to help solidify the club as a contender. But again, it's just, you know, the whole contender part. It's not the champion part. There's no silverware as it is to go ahead and hang your hat on there. So I'm optimistic that Mourinho, having been there, having done that, has the ability to push Spurs over the top. It's not like – let me give you an analogy here. It's not even soccer-related, but for the people who are listening that happen to follow the NFL, if you go back to 2002, 2001, actually late 1990s and early 2000s, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were perennially very, very good and in the playoff hunt and playing very well under Tony Dungy. But he could never get them over the hump to the Super Bowl until they let him go. They brought in John Gruden, who went ahead and put a little more fire in the offense, and that seemed to be the change that that they needed to get over the hump and win the Super Bowl. So I have a feeling that this is a lot like that, in that Mourinho has the ability to get us over the hump. He's been there. He knows what it takes to get there. And so I'm optimistic. That's where I'm at on this Monday evening before Thanksgiving.
You both touched on growth. The managers before Jose Mourinho were Andres Villas-Boas and Tim Sherwood. Then Pochettino comes in. And I guess you could say, like Tony Dungy for the Bucks, he definitely has to get some credit for growing the profile of the squad, to taking mm-hmm. them from the kind of lovable losers to a legitimate contender. It was the top five and Tottenham. Now it's a bona fide top six. They are looked at as a serious contender, a top six team, a team that should be there or thereabouts. This season has been disappointing, but you are coming off of a Champions League final. And when you look at the legacy of a manager, sometimes you can look at the guy who follows after him. To go from hiring the Tim Sherwoods, the Andres Villas-Boas, the Juan de Ramoses of the world, to getting in Jose Mourinho, who is, despite his recent managerial stint, still looked upon as one of the biggest managers in the world, one of the top names available, a guy who, if you are to believe reports, was courted by Real Madrid, considered in the running to possibly take over Arsenal, any number of ones. How true that may or may not be, it remains up for debate. But certainly, number one, Poch deserves a lot of credit for expanding Tottenham into a global brand over the course of the last 5 years. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Poch and his time at Spurs, I mean, for us as supporters, we're going to look at this this time as, look what Poch did for us and for our team. We'll look back on this, on his the years where he put us in the top five, top four even, with great fondness. And because, like I said, the supporters love Potch. A lot of people were distressed when he was let go. Friends of mine from overseas, over in the in England, when they heard about the news, one of them posted on Facebook. He says, "I am literally in tears," and we like the guy. He's likable, and that's, I think, part of the thing that the players liked about him is that, you know, he was a likable guy, and perhaps maybe that might have been his downfall. He might have been too likable and not enough of a, perhaps maybe a stricter or disciplinarian type of coach. When players needed a swift kick in the butt, he didn't. Maybe he didn't give them what they needed in that instance. Maybe just too much of the buddy, perhaps. Instead of, you know, it's one thing to be friendly with players, but sometimes they don't need a friend. Sometimes they just need someone to give them a swift kick in the butt to get them playing right. And I have a feeling Mourinho is that kind of guy. It just seemed that when I saw footage of the trainings before the West Ham game, it looked like he was going by and talking to the players in different manners. It wasn't a one-size-fits-all. He was dealing with each player on their own level. In particular, Dele, when he went to Dele during the practice and basically asked, well, which Dele is going to show up to the game? Am I going to get the Dele that's, you know, been playing lethargically and kind of half playing the game over the last few years, or am I going to get the Dele that was on fire just a couple years ago? And, well, I guess Dele answered that question on Saturday. But he didn't treat all the players like that. He went to them all and talked to them differently. And I'm not sure, but maybe that played into the equation just a little bit.
It's funny that you say that, because a lot of what I had heard was kind of the opposite, was that the trainings were too intense, that the players had soured on the two-a-days, and that they were growing resistant to his message and his methods, and he being Poch. And as a result, the older players had kind of started to tune him out. And had he had younger players in where he could push them hard like he was, he would have gotten someplace, but the squad hadn't been refreshed in so long that there was sort of this malaise. And I don't think that we're ever fully going to know, despite the Amazon cameras, what was going on in that dressing room. But it'll be interesting to see how they take to Jose Mourinho, who is a manager who's definitely not known for cultivating always the greatest relationships with his players. Nonetheless, Poch will leave with the most wins of any manager in Tottenham history since before World War I. He had 293. He trails John Cameron, who stepped down in who had the best work, the most wins since Bill Nicholson in 74. So, you know, it's not like he leaves behind a squad that is much better shape than when he took it over. But you brought up the comparison, Los, with John Gruden and Tony Dungy, and that Tony Dungy took over and John Gruden came in John Gruden came in and took over for Tony Dungy and got him over the hump. And yeah, in his first season, John Gruden won a Super Bowl. But as a Gulf Coast resident, I'm sure you'll be able to tell me what happened in the seasons after that for the Bucks.
Well, yeah, the real Bucks came out and showed their true colors. I'll be honest. This is a soccer show, but I can share my thoughts about how the Buccaneers won their Super Bowl some other time with you off air. But it's one thing for Mourinho to get this opportunity now we're still in the hunt for Champions League. I mean, we're in the second place right now in our group We got Olympiacos at home tomorrow, and the squad just seems to be they seem to be reinvigorated by the win against West Ham. Albeit, I mean, we dominated the first 60 minutes, and then we kind of forgot there was still a game for the last 30. So, but even so, I think we can get out of the group stage and into the knockout stage in the Champions League. We're in good shape for that. And if Mourinho has shown us anything, he's shown us he can win competitions. So I think he's gonna. He knows what to do to get us into that knockout stage, and then from there, you just got to beat the competition in front of you, and you don't have to worry about anybody else. You just got to play who's in front of you. Whereas in the group stage, you kind of got to worry about what other teams are doing as well.
It's undoubted that Jose Mourinho has capacity to win trophies. That is the one thing that he has managed to do at every stop that he's been at. The other thing is that he leaves a wide swath of destruction behind him. And
hey, I mean, is this like a personal commentary now?
No, I'm actually looking at sort of the whole, how it was, the state of what happened when he left Real Madrid, when he left Chelsea, when he Inter was a bit different. He left after Champions League, but I think it was a different squad. But certainly Real Madrid, Chelsea, the second time around, and Manchester United, he's left a pretty wide path of destruction. And it's been characterized in each case by that third season meltdown. The question is the trophy that you will win, because it has not been something that's been there much on the offing for Tottenham, worth the burning the house down, as it were, to get it, which is something that Jose will do. He will win you a trophy, but he will burn the house down to get it. And are you guys, is that trophy, is that piece of silverware worth it from the Tottenham perspective? Certainly at teams that have a longer history of winning in Real Madrid and Chelsea and Manchester United, it wasn't in the long run. Tottenham, different set of circumstances. And for Mourinho, again, this may be his last chance. It's not like, yes, I've just made the case that Tottenham has grown into one of the bigger teams in the world, but they are not in that elite level, sorry, most, with the likes of Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, Manchester United, those sort of global, historically global brands and known champions. And this could be his last opportunity to either A, manage at this level where he's at, or B, get back into that next level up.
Well, you give me a lot to think about there. Let's just get to, I guess, the latest team that Mourinho left or got fired from. Manchester United are pretty much in the same position table-wise as they were when he left about a year ago. I don't know. And it's almost like, okay, Ole Gunnar had like a really nice run there of like 7 or 8 matches where they kept winning and it was looking great. And then all of a sudden the season went out from under him. But now the question is the fact that they were around the same place where they are currently last year when they let him go. I'm scratching my head. I mean, I'm okay with the fact that, you know, we got him as a manager now. Let's see what he can do. But maybe Man U might have jumped the gun a little bit in letting him go. Maybe they should have held on to him. You didn't fare much better without him.
Thing, or is that an Ole thing? I would say that more down to the guy who has the job than the guy who left it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to jump in here. I'm in looking at that. Think about what happened with Chelsea after he left the second time around, though. I mean, Chelsea apparently were in pretty. The talk was that they were in relative shambles, I believe. But if I'm not mistaken, they won again with Conte.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but granted, he's coming up. He won another league title there, and then, of course, the dumpster fire occurred. But Conte came in and seemed to put the fire out relatively quickly, and that could just be a testament of the owner, who seems to have the ability to manufacture coaches in and out pretty quickly at Chelsea. And but you look at – I mean, of course, they're going to go directly with what's going on with Manchester United, but it seems to me like that's more of a situation with Ole Gunnar than it is with how Mourinho left, because – the talent still seems to be there with Manchester United. So my concern with Spurs, though, with this whole situation is, if this dumpster fire does occur, do Spurs have the ability to reload when the players who are sick of it decide to move on? Are the Spurs going to be able to – do they have the youth system set up already? Are they going to be able to bring in players through the transfer market? Are they going to have – is Mourinho going to be able to kind of give them enough sponsorship and global brand so they actually have the funds to make big transfers? Because they spent a lot of money on Ndombele. So I think that would be a bigger question for me, as opposed to thinking, you know, is the club in a situation now where they're going to be worse off after Mourinho leaves? And as far as the Premier League is concerned, I mean, you have two good weekends, you're in fifth place. I mean, if you look at the standings, you have, what is it, a 4-point differential from Europe to not being in Europe, to being just above the drop zone. So the log jam is so thick outside of the top four that, I mean, if it looks like this after December, after those games occur, I think it's pretty much set who top four is going to be. But we're looking at Wolves and Sheffield taking the other two Europa League spots. So, that being said, though, if Pochettino had two good weekends in a row, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And So I'm just not quite sure that Spurs are going to be so much worse off if this doesn't go well with Mourinho, is what I'm saying. It seems like, especially for domestically, you see the league, you don't have any other league in the world that has a log jam like this.
That could be a lot of things. That could be just down to how poorly some of those teams that we expected to be better are playing.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about it. The team outside of the top four, the team with the most wins is Burnley, and they only have five. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the fifth and sixth place team only have four wins. So you're looking at teams, every team that's above 17th only has four or five wins, and only one of them has five. There's 10 teams with four wins. So it's ridiculous.
You got parity. You know, you want parity, you got parity. That's what you got.
Yeah.
It's very competitive. But when people are used to seeing your team dominate and be up in the top, to see them elsewhere leaves you, wanting to yell at management, which is, you know, the thing, with Mourinho coming in, a couple things come to mind. That whole Amazon show, perhaps maybe there wasn't enough drama under Poch for them to, you know, get ratings. So they said, let's go ahead and bring in this guy. Because
that'd be another one. Show.
always good for a soundbite. But
that'll definitely – Jose, if nothing else, his box office gold.
Right. Right. But, you know, and he's saying all the right things right now. You know, his initial press conference and the press conference after the West Ham match, he's saying all the right things. He's not committing anything, you know, but, you know, they said, you know, is this team capable of winning a trophy? He said, yes, they can win a trophy. He stopped short of saying they will win a trophy. So maybe he sees his own limitations. All I can say is that Mourinho being the self-appointed special one and Daniel Levy, the owner, the chairman, that is, of the Spurs, they're both cut of the same cloth. They're both egotistical, and it's almost like Levy wanted a coach that was like him in personality, and so he went out and found Mourinho, and so whatever. If this thing blows up in his face, then, well, you know, you deserve each other. But if he can bring a trophy, then Levy's choice is vindicated, even if it does burn down the house. Because when you think about it, Spurs, they have a great system of young players. Their under-23s are playing real well. And, of course, they brought up Troy Parrott. He hasn't got much playing time, but he's seen some time on the international stage for Ireland and has been playing very, very well and got the attention of, I believe it was Bayern Munich who was interested in him to go and play for them over there. So I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, Mourinho and Levy, you know, it's, I look at this like, okay, match made in heaven or match made in hell. We'll find out.
That was what I was going to say, because you have an inflexible coach matched up with an extremely stubborn owner. There's no potential at all for that one to go pear-shaped. like you said, though, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, we'll all be sitting there saying, well, I told you so. But the youth system is an interesting question that I have. It's a youth system that is built to play in the mold of Mauricio Pochettino with the more attacking, pressing, energetic style. That is not something that Jose tends to like to do. How is that matchup going to mesh?
Well, all I can say is that when they finally get to play with the big boys, Mourinho will find a way to go ahead and get them to work in his system. He finds a way. He takes players and gets them to do what he needs them to do. And like you were saying, sometimes it's not pretty, sometimes it's very boring, and sometimes just flat out ugly. But he gets results. So it's we'll wait and see. I mean, it's he won this weekend. It's too early to say he's the he's the special one again. Let's wait and see what happens. I'm hoping that we can say, wow, this guy really has the Midas touch, and look what he did for Spurs. But it's just too early to say that.
So, before we go any further, I want to make sure I give a shout-out to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, and D.C.'s premier venue for live sports and entertainment. And the place to be to watch the European matches on Tuesday and Wednesday. Sorry, Thursday for the Europa League, and the secondary tournament is out because of that Thanksgiving thing.
Mm-hmm.
And to catch Mourinho's second game in charge this weekend. Who do you have this weekend, Los?
We got Olympiacos. Oh, this weekend or tomorrow?
This weekend.
This weekend. I have to double check. I'm just focused on tomorrow. Looks, crap, my phone just took a shit on me.
You guys got Bournemouth coming up.
Oh, that should be an interesting one.
Bournemouth at home. We're not going anywhere. Bournemouth is playing they're hot and cold. They play well and then they don't play well. So it really depends on what team shows up at Spurs Stadium and who we have to compete. And well, you know what, to be honest, it's the same thing for Spurs. Which team's going to show up when it's time to play? We're going to, you know, be that team that dominated the first 60 minutes this last Saturday, or are we going to team that gave up two goals in the last 30 minutes and one in stoppage time? What team's going to show up?
And this could be one of Eddie Howe's last games in charge of Bournemouth, because he's rumored to be in the running for the Everton job should Silva get the boot for an underperforming Toffee side. So that'll be an interesting one. Well, Lois, I want to give you a big thanks for coming on and joining us and talking a little bit about Tottenham and giving your opinion. You seem to be of the opinion that it's too early, but hey, if it works, it works, and it's worth it.
Well, that's pretty much. But I'm hoping he doesn't have to burn down the house just to get the victory.
Well, we'll keep an eye on it. But it was good to have you, and we'll talk to you in a little bit later on in the season and see if your opinion has changed.
All right, guys. Hope you enjoy your holiday and enjoy the nap that ensues after eating all the turkey.
Best of tryptophan-induced comas to you as well, sir.
Take care.
Hey, thank you.
So, now, on the other side of London,
yeah.
Does this start the managerial merry-go-round? Because with Poch being out there, if you are a team like Arsenal, like Manchester United, even like Real Madrid, and you had identified Poch as a potential manager next year or even later on this season, do you suddenly make the move now and say, I've got to go and get this guy? Because we have seen ample evidence of what not hiring the right manager can do, or staying too long with a manager can do. And if the positive would be Liverpool, mm-hmm. who got rid of Brendan Rodgers and got Jurgen Klopp in, and look where it's taken them.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, you can talk about Manchester United in the post-Ferguson era, which has just been a litany of underperforming managers who they've been forced to hire because perhaps the better choice wasn't around at the time they decided to make that decision.
Yeah, this is a hard one. This is a real hard one because, you know, as soon as this happened, everything started, all the fireworks started happening around Arsenal, of course, because their main rival fired a manager who was well respected, who had the even though there were grumblings that he might not make it through the season, it was more because they were going to sell him, or they were going to move him on because they knew he would be moving on to a bigger job, such as at Real Madrid or Bayern Munich or something like that. And now, it was with the firing that's occurred, it is a bit shocking. But you're now sitting there going, "Ooh, is the fear is does this team jump the gun and go get him?" And I can't say that would be something like Arsenal would do, because in my entire fandom of that team, they've only had two managers, and one of them was Arsene Wenger. So it's difficult to say. Having seen what happened with Manchester United after David Moyes and Louis van Gaal and then Jose Mourinho, you know, you're kind of seeing this whole thing of, ooh, you really got to get the right manager in there, especially for a club that doesn't have an owner like Roman Abramovich, who seems to know how to get the manager to come and do really well. Because even the Sarri, you can say what you want about Sarri, they won the Europa League. So,
mm-hmm.
and now they're in Champions League. So it's still like, ooh, it's a bit scary. And yes, you have to have the right manager. You really, really do. And it seems like outside of maybe Pep, I don't think there could be a manager that you can just plop in any club. The manager has to fit that specific club. So, you know, Emery is definitely on the hot seat. Definitely. Especially after the recent plays, the recent displays, and the way they drew against a team that lost 9-0, even if they had a red card, they still lost 9-0 to Leicester. So yes, I do think there is going to be the merry-go-round. It's going to happen. I think you're going to start seeing some managers dropping off like flies, because I think a lot of clubs are going to try to go after Pochettino. I think it's a mistake, though, for certain clubs to move on their manager if there's no say Pochettino's going to come. he might not want that job. He might be well aware of what the market is for him right now and what he could possibly do at a club that have more resources or have more of a winning pedigree than Tottenham Hotspur do. So, that's a very interesting question. And I think January is going to be I think some teams are going to be a little gun shy because they're probably going to go, well, I'm not sure what to do because if we can get a new manager, they may want to make some moves or we might not want to make these moves so I don't know. I mean, from the perspective of Arsenal have to do something. They have to do something really, really fast because now you're seeing players who I don't believe are players that should be moving on are talking about moving on, maybe Lucas Torreira. And now you have the manager. Now reports are saying that the manager doesn't even want scouts to look at the videos of opposing teams' games because only he wants to see them all now. So you're seeing this kind of consolidation of it's my way or the highway, and I don't know if that's going to be effective. So should he remain there? I'm not ready to go that far yet in saying yes or no, but I don't think it would be a wise move to simply move him on because you think you're going to be able to bring in Pochettino. And then if you bring in Pochettino, there's no say that Pochettino is going to do a better job, even though Arsenal's a bigger club with more finances and more resources and just has more history. I don't know. That's a really good question.
Clearly right now, Bayern Munich is the big one because their managerial job is open.
It's open.
If you look and say Bayern Munich, at the clubs who have managers that we consider to be on the hot seat, Bayern's job is already open. Zinedine Zidane's position at Real Madrid is not set in stone.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Unai Emery are certainly under pressure at Arsenal and Manchester United. Those are four major teams. And there aren't enough managers out there right now to take those jobs who are capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a game of musical chairs and somebody is going to be left
mm-hmm.
without a chair or without a manager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Allegri's out there. You
mm-hmm.
have Benitez. You have Pochettino. And if reports are to be believed, Miguel Arteta at
mm-hmm.
Manchester City, who's looked
mm-hmm.
at as one of the top lieutenants. Somebody's going to be left without a chair when the music stops.
Mm-hmm.
Do you jump? Is it a case where, hey, I'd rather jump the gun now? Because if I don't get Pochettino, maybe I can get Allegri in.
Right.
You know, Benitez might be a good stopgap, but you're still going to be in the same position. After those guys, you got to start looking at, and the managers have questions. You know, does Ten Hag want to come to England, or
mm-hmm.
is he happy on the continent dealing in Germany?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Niko Kovac, certainly it didn't look really good. Oh, by the way, I also forgot to include in there, they're not exactly reports on how well Thomas Tuchel is getting along at PSG are mixed as well.
Right.
And that one, much kind of like an earlier version of Tottenham and Jose Mourinho, I guess you could see, like I told you when he first got hired, I thought that was an interesting one given Tuchel's relationship with management and
mm-hmm.
players. His, much like Mourinho, his shtick tends to wear thin very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of clubs right now. And if you were willing to pay $30 million to get Pochettino when he had a job, are you willing to pay considerably less to get rid of your manager when he doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
Does the firing say, okay, maybe we should wait? I look at it like a stock. If you liked Johnson & Johnson when it was $80 a share, do you like it less when it's $60?
That's a good question. I think you would. I mean, I think logical minds would think that you would like it more.
Yeah.
Yeah. You would definitely go, well, shoot, we don't have to pay a fee for him. He's out there now, and we can just bring him in and sign him. I mean, it does make sense that that's what a club would do. But it would have to be a club that, I mean, it boils down to those resources. It would have to be a club that has.
Like we're not talking about Everton. We're not talking about West Ham.
But I'm
The Arsenal's got resources. Real Madrid have resources.
But Arsenal doesn't
have
the resources. But like there's. But I would even think that. But Arsenal doesn't have the resources of Manchester United. But you know, of course, they have way more resources than Spurs. So. But you got to think like, is the juice worth the squeeze in a way? And I mean, personally, I think, yes, you should. I think, yes, you should, especially if you're a club that has the means, because what's the worst that's going to come of it? You're going to be able to come out of it. I mean, this isn't American sports where you make a wrong draft pick and you're stuck with somebody for years and you don't really know what to do with it. You can actually bring in this. You can move your coach on and just bring him in and just pay him. I mean, you can do that. It would make sense to do that, especially if the hole that's in your managerial situation is blatantly evident. And so you're thinking of Manchester United. You're thinking of Arsenal. I think more so Arsenal than Manchester United is that there is a huge hole in the people who are running the day-to-day operations of the product on the field. There's a huge hole there, and it makes no sense to keep it on, especially when there's a manager out there that you think or you believe would do a better job. Now, of course, you wouldn't want to do that until you had some sort of verbal confirmation that they're interested in the position and would take it if offered. But I don't see how your interest would wane. I think it would be very wise to go, We can't be much worse than we are. I mean, Arsenal's, even though they're still in eighth place, I'll say this, they're the worst eighth place team. They were the worst third place team, worst fifth place team, now they're the worst eighth place team. They look really, really, really poor. And just watching that game, the Manchester United Sheffield game, Sheffield and Manchester United look several places ahead of the performance that Arsenal gave. I mean, Arsenal looks like a club that should be battling out of the relegation zone right now with the recent performances. So, yeah, I think in that situation, yes, you got to move on.
Speaking of Manchester United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer just finished up his 34th game in charge. In those 34 games, he's amassed 57 points, which is the exact same amount as David Moyes had in his first 34 games in charge.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like when we talk about the favorite managers to get sacked, you have Unai Emery at Arsenal, Silva at Everton, and Pellegrini at West Ham, leading the sack race in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
But Ole is relatively getting a pass. And based on the product and the outcome on field, one would wonder if that should be the case.
Mm-hmm.
I was not overly impressed. I think that game on Sunday was, again, a manifestation of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's evident shortcomings as a manager. At the beginning of the season, you could say, okay, the failure to win on the road was a bit of an aberration, but it's becoming more and more of a trend. This idea of the players needing to come up with something, the over-reliance on untested players. You know, Frank Lampard's playing with a bunch of youth players, and he's in
and
third place.
Yeah.
And they're killing a full 10 points ahead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that there is a tactical and managerial naivete to Ole in the Premier League that has plagued him. And again, this is not a guy who does not have Premier League experience. We saw what happened when he was in Cardiff and he lost that job.
Mm-hmm.
I have to question whether or not his seat should be as secure. Now, my goal in doing this is not to make this Arsenal and United Complaint Radio.
Right.
Say, you know, you have a series of underperforming teams, and whether or not the manager, or in the case of United, whether or not it's more of a front office issue. And if it is, how much more time do you have to fix this before we reach the crisis from which there's no coming back?
I would give Manchester United, a bit more time than Arsenal. I mean, again, I've turned this into like the complaint hour, but they have, you know, they've won two of their last five in the Premier League, which is better than Arsenal, which has won zero of their last five and have three losses. And you're also looking at Manchester United, where a few weeks ago they were sitting in the teens. You know, they're pretty low. They've been steadily moving up the table. They have. And if Manchester United win again and again, I mean, they could easily be back in Europa League placements. I mean, I do think the top four is kind of pulled away a little bit. But you could still see Manchester United trending up, even if they have had some bumps in the road over the past few weeks. I think you have to give Ole Gunnar January as well. I think the bigger thing, though, is that Nuno Espirito Santo up at Wolves is already getting – the rumors for him moving on are already starting. They're talking about him being moved as early as January to a bigger club to manage because, you know, that team was in the relegation zone for the first, what, five or six games. Now they're sitting in fifth, which is extraordinarily impressive. And they're winning in Europa League. So the coaching merry-go-round could actually get a little bit fuller now. But at least to me, it seems like Moyes, I think he deserves – Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I think he does deserve a little bit more time because, yes, I think they have bottomed out. And I think it'll be – you know, we got to see what happens with Pogba because, of course, recent – you know, Twitter, Reddit feeds are saying that Pogba is refusing to play for Manchester United until January transfer window, which by claiming that he's injured, which who knows how much that's actually true or how much of that is just, you know, somebody with an overzealous pen writing a story. So I think that will be a big deal to just see what is up with their star player who hasn't really been playing like their star player much at all over the past year. Would carry a bit more weight, I think, especially if, let's say, Pogba moves to Real Madrid in January, they sell him, Manchester United get a good chunk of money, are able to bring in a replacement that can play much more of into the system that Ole Gunnar wants to play, and they start looking a little better, you know, where I don't see that same opportunity occurring for Arsenal. There isn't a, you know, the fact that Unai Emery can't really get anything out of Pepe when seeing Pepe perform for the Ivory Coast as well as for, I think it was Lyon last year, he's got a lot of talent. And seeing some of the stuff he does in the field, even though he's not scoring, is still, you're looking at it going, there's a lot there. You should be getting more than that.
I think when you look at it, the jobs that, you know, Chris Wilder at Sheffield United, the job that Frank Lampard at Chelsea, Nuno at Wolves.
Yeah, and you got to give Brendan Rodgers a lot of credit for what he's doing at Leicester.
Brendan Rodgers at Leicester have done, laid bare the fact that a manager can make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at them and you have to say that the talent on offering at a club like Tottenham, like a club at United, like a club at Arsenal, is on paper superior to what is on offering at Sheffield United, at Bournemouth, at Wolves. Yet, these managers have their teams performing consistently week in, week out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, number one, full credit to them. Phenomenal job.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
absolutely. Phenomenal job.
I thought that Sheffield United were done. Chris Wilder, he was probably be moving on to something bigger and better. Hopefully he takes the right job at the right time because we have seen what happens to young managers when they get into the Premier League, the next big thing in the Premier League, and then it goes away super quick. And, you know, especially with English managers. I think I'm surprised that Eddie Howe has been at Bournemouth for as long.
Me too.
It's weird. It's almost like in that manager merry-go-round, you have the Mark Hughes of the world who jump up jobs really quickly because they find a modicum of success and then they flame out. But then you have the exact opposite of David Moyes, who hangs around at the club so long and keeps getting past that by the time he does get the shot, he can't take it. And then he basically plays football within a couple of years. I hope that Eddie Howe does get a shot because I do think he is a good manager.
Agreed.
I'd be interested to see what he does. I'm surprised that after all these seasons, after we've been talking about him since we started doing this.
Absolutely.
Three seasons we've been looking at him, and he's still there.
And Bournemouth is still performing. I mean, we talked about how, you know, I think they had that ninth place finish a couple years ago, and we talked about how, okay, this could be this kind of flash in the pan season for Bournemouth where they go, oh, look what we did, and then they end up being relegated in a couple of years. But it seems consistently they're not even – I mean, early in the season, they're already kind of like – no one's talking about them being relegated, and they're looking at a mid-table season again. And, you know, they lost a tough match against the Wolves team that had, after a red card. But previously, you know, they had two draws and a win. I mean, you get two draws and a win and a loss out of four games. For a club like Bournemouth, that's success. Their talented players are also enjoying their time there, and they're wanting to go there. So, and that's a small town. It's a small club with a small stadium. And Eddie Howe is proving time and time again that he can win. And I'm personally surprised that he's still there. I actually went to Arsenal to go get him after Wenger was unceremoniously let go. Probably the best that he didn't because he was still in his 30s at that time. But, you know, you have this kind of this crop of English managers that we hope can sustain some success in the leagues that they're in and hopefully move back into the jobs that they used to have with a lot of the big clubs in England. Because you're also talking about, I mean, all props to Frank Lampard. I mean, Chelsea Mike earlier at the start of the season was saying how he was pretty nervous about it and didn't think he was ready. And this isn't the right time to bring in your club legend to come in and take over as manager. And I didn't disagree. And I mean, I've been eating my words a lot this year because everything I thought isn't really happening. And what he's getting out of those young players is remarkable. I mean, it's remarkable. He has Pulisic looking borderline world class, which is shocking for any American player. So yeah, definitely props to them. They deserve all the accolades that they're getting.
I wonder though, it used to be that there was, to use a Latin phrase to another classics minor, the cursus honorum. You'd start out at like a relegation threatened team and then you could step up and take an Everton or a Tottenham job and then win the United job. Or we've seen Tottenham who would have been that step for an Eddie Howe.
Yep.
Or Nuno Espirito Santo, or go with Jose Mourinho. So that one's out.
Yeah, that's true.
There really
that's
is
the
no middle
ground. Exactly right. Yeah.
There really is no more middle ground in between the Bournemouths of the world and the idea. Well, he's doing this on purse strings, and what's he going to do when he has resources? And can he manage in Europe? And does all this sort of stuff? Can he handle that pressure? There's nothing in the middle. It's almost like they would have to go abroad and manage maybe in the Bundesliga to prove that they were capable of coming back and doing that. There just doesn't be that. And again, I'm surprised, you know, you're hearing that he could be in line for the Everton job, you know, certainly at West Ham, should Pellegrini go? But West Ham are a huge club that has massively consistently underperformed, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Relative to their fan base, the size of their fan base has perpetually underperformed. you would think that this would be a team that would be, again, in the mix for challenging for Europe, as big a fan base as they have. Plus, with the addition of playing in the Olympic Stadium now, I know that's not a great venue for watching soccer, but you would expect them to just be bigger than they are. And they've been, in my memory, they've been relegated as many times as I've seen them in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, West Ham should have been that job. You know, the one you're talking about. That should be West Ham. And now West Ham's looked at as the job that you get after you've had your success and you're trying to hang on a little bit. That seems to be now the West Ham job. You know, it seems like Big Sam was there like 8 times. I'm sure I'm wrong, but it just seems like every now and then Big Sam would show up at West Ham again. That's not the situation anymore. Yeah, you're seeing. I mean, which is probably why Eddie Howe stayed at Bournemouth as long as he has been, because even then he's only 41. I mean,
oh, he's very young, but
yeah, he's a baby.
You know, is he going to stay there? Does he take the England job after the World Cup or the Euros?
That's what I don't want him to do. I don't want him to do that. Don't take that England job. Don't do it. Don't do it, man. We've talked about that, man. England fans are the best, but they hate their club. They hate their national squad, boy. They just hate them.
I don't know. I feel like they kind of are all right now.
They're kind of all right, yeah. Oh, man. I always find that to be the funniest thing.
I have to feel like, look, Gareth Southgate, I remember, I believe from his time at Middlesbrough.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about a guy who used the international stage to rebuild his career. I would figure when Gareth Southgate left England, there would be no shortage of job offers for him.
Mm-hmm. Agreed, yeah. Absolutely. It's funny though. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'd heard the name before, but I was shocked when he got that job. I was like, oh, really? I remember him as a player for Middlesbrough, but as a manager, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot that he managed. Who was that guy?
Yeah,
and yeah.
When he
wants to step away though, he's gonna have his pick, and he's gonna be able to manage internationally too. He's not gonna be stuck in England.
And in that respect, I feel like the England job is no longer the same sort of poison chalice. Somebody could go take that job following Southgate and move on from there. But Southgate, to me, in England, has the potential to be a little bit like Pochettino. And what I didn't bring up with Los is, we've talked about it before, one of my favorite Dostoevsky quotes, the hardest thing to do in life is to know when to die. And would Pochettino have been better served if he had left at the end of last year? Just like I think after the World Cup, you know, despite the fact that it didn't end well for Southgate, you know, if he goes in and he has a great Euros, then, yeah, the stock rises, and then I think it's time for him to jump ship. I know the allure of being the manager to bring back the World Cup for England would be huge, and, you know, you would be golden, but I think going in, if he makes it to the semifinals of the Euros this year, and believe me, England have a shot to do it, but they will be in an impossibly hard group.
Yeah.
It would be the right time to jump because the chances of it going south, having gone through yet another international cycle, which would be his fourth, there's just too much there.
Right.
You very rarely see managers hang on for 3 international tournaments, let alone 4. And we've seen what has happened to Yogi Love in his time in Germany.
Yeah.
You know, I am better, but man, was it close for him for a little
mm-hmm.
bit.
Mm-hmm. It sure was. That was the, that's what came to mind when you were talking about kind of the multiple cycles. I don't know. Just in England, though, it seems like I mean Southgate's more of the standout as opposed to the standard. So that's why I have a little pause about a younger manager taking that position. Granted, Southgate's not an old guy himself. He's only 49. And that's not old at all by managerial standards. But I don't know. That one just seems tough to me. That just seems tough. And seeing as how successful Eddie Howe's been at the club level, I think it would be wise if he remained there for the foreseeable future.
And club success and international success are typically two totally different things,
especially with what we've seen with just the ineptitude in the U.S. national team management system. So it's definitely not the same thing. I mean, you can even take Bob Bradley, who managed the U.S. very well, and actually got a lot of respect the way he managed Egypt, and that didn't translate really at all to the club game. So, you know, we've even seen it go the other way as well.
Well, I think Bob Bradley is one of those ones, and maybe Gareth Southgate is the same way. He's just a
like,
better
I'm an international manager. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a good international manager. I'm going to be an international manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can even see Southgate in the post-England days just kind of like maybe if this is what – let's say he goes back to the club system and it doesn't work for him, he goes and then he manages Mexico or even United States or you know, something like that. I could totally see something like that happening.
So – well, the hour is going by relatively quickly, and I'm not going to lie, the managerial stuff was as interesting as anything that kind of happened this weekend.
Yeah.
Because the league in the Premier League, although we talk about parity, it is what it is. Liverpool continues to win. I want to give them credit. You know, we haven't been able to get British Will on to brag about Liverpool, but
yeah.
The title seems inexorable at this point.
Yeah, right.
Brendan Rodgers continues to have.
Dude, we got to go find a Leicester fan. I mean, this team can't lose. They look like.
And, you know, Brendan had the great season at Liverpool where they finished second.
Mm-hmm.
The wheels came off a bit in the season following after the sale of Luis Suarez. With a slightly older team. He went to Celtic and won everything.
You and I could win league titles at Celtic, man. Sorry. That's just not impressive.
Ronnie Delia couldn't, so
yeah.
Failed. So it's not a given.
In the years that he was running it was a bit more of a given because Rangers are still coming out of that hole that they were in. So it was a bit easier time there because they really didn't have much competition. I'm just throwing that out there. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, he had the mammoth unbeaten domestic run.
Right.
And
that's difficult. That's very difficult to do in any circumstance.
And although we talk about Celtic being a relatively easy job because of the financial clout that they have, the pressure on the Celtic manager is huge. I think one of the reasons why he's finding so much success at Leicester, as strange as this seems, there's probably less pressure on him at Leicester than there was at Celtic.
Oh, agreed. I mean, I would say domestically speaking, he's at a smaller club. He's
in
a smaller city. I mean, say what you want. Glasgow is still Glasgow. It's a big city in Scotland. So, the level of scrutiny that he's under is definitely going to be much less. There's plenty of Celtic bars. I don't know where a Leicester bar is.
Exactly. And he's got we spoke about the job that Frank Lampard's doing at Chelsea, and even though they had the loss to Man City, they continue to march forward, and they certainly look much better than we had anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, and Nuno doing Uncle Nuno things now that he's gotten that balance between Europe and stuff going forward. But that's a good time to transition. We have the ultimate weekend of European group stage football. And I love that they save some of the big ones for last. I don't know how much of this was intentional and how much of this was just happenstance. And there are, this is the week where you have those, we talked about it when it started, that that first round of fixtures was the really big one that had all the tasty games. Now we come to the last week, and again, we're blessed with some ones that are really worth watching. Real Madrid, PSG, Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, Napoli, although Napoli, we didn't get a chance to talk about. It has gone bad there.
Bad, yeah. Yeah, really bad.
In fact, they're talking about selling Koulibaly, Allen, Insigne, Dries Martens, and Jose Calajon all in January. If that is the case and Aurelio De Laurentiis wants to do that, I would like to know where I can put my bid in, because I will take Koulibaly, I will take Insigne, I will take, I'll even take Dries Martens off your hands, because whatever club they go to, they are going to help out.
Absolutely. And you know, Napoli shouldn't be doing that, I don't think. So they're still pretty well set up to move on to the next stage of Champions League, at least get to the knockout stage. So. But yeah, it's not all as well in the water over there.
But insofar as that we're having this, you know, really the only group that is still up in the air is Group H, and one of Ajax, Chelsea, and Valencia is going into the Europa League, and that is bad for anybody in the Europa League. Now, my money is on either Chelsea or Valencia, who will be playing each other, as Ajax has Lille. Ajax sitting on 7, Lille on 1. A win sees Ajax through. They should go through. Then it would be the winner of the Chelsea and Valencia game. If it draws, then it goes to all sorts of tie breaks. Most of the rest of the groups, you have teams just playing for seeding. And
right,
right at the first leg, the second leg at home. You know, PSG is already through. Basically, Group A is set. It's PSG and Real Madrid. Same with Group B. It's Tottenham and Bayern. Shakhtar Donetsk and Dinamo Zagreb are both tied on 5. Juventus and Atletico Madrid are both
through. Yeah, that's both through. That's pretty much done.
Liverpool
yeah.
and Napoli are both through. And then Group F, there is a possibility that Inter Milan could sneak in there,
yeah.
Especially since they have Slavia Prague and Dortmund have Barcelona. And just like at Napoli, all is not right in Dortmund.
Dortmund's struggling.
Especially, you're hearing rumors that Jadon Sancho is like, he is done.
He's done, yeah.
He was, reports have it that he was fined after returning late from the international break. He was made to train alone. He's very unhappy and feeling like a scapegoat for their struggle.
Yeah.
I would, you know, Inter's on the road in Prague, which might make it a little bit difficult for him. But Dortmund's traveling to the Camp Nou, so it's really interesting to see how that one goes.
Yeah, I get the sense that that if Sancho's smart, or if the club is trying to freeze him out because they know they're just going to end up selling him, because he's a 100 million euro player. I could see him really not playing too much.
You know what? I messed up because there is actually another round of games, so it's not all done and dusted, but it's getting there.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close. I mean, but you know, they're not going to go into Camp Nou and win with the current state of affairs there. And with granted, we're going to hear much more about Sancho being that he is an English player, and that's kind of our vein into European football, but you know, he's worth a lot of money to that club, and that club knows that they aren't going to keep him very long. And and I'm sure there's enough interest from City, United, Real Madrid is also kicking the tires. Barcelona's kicking the tires on him as well. So I can see him wanting to play in these Champions League games so he can get more exposure that way, and then just sort of not really being much of a fixture for their domestic campaign and just try to move out of there. He's cup tied. I mean, he can't play Champions League anymore this season if he leaves Dortmund.
He could play Europa League, though.
But he could play Europa League, yeah. He could play Europa League, yeah. So,
now, the interesting one is, though...
But the teams that want him aren't going to be in Europa League. I know that.
The teams that want him aren't going to be in Europa League, but
yeah.
I also think that teams that you're mentioning with the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona, I think that's more lip service than anything else. Again,
yeah,
you
too,
had reports from France that said that PSG has accepted that Neymar will leave. You know, Real, Zinedine Zidane seems to be very focused on Kylian
Mbappe. Yeah.
I can't. While Sancho is a great young player, and one might argue more impactful than the Neymar right now, I can't. He doesn't have the same box office for Barcelona or Real Madrid that a Kylian Mbappe or a Neymar does.
Mm-hmm.
And Barcelona is hamstrung by the Messi effect.
Right.
And I can't see that going down this summer. The only way I could see one of those guys going this summer is if, in fact, as has been reported, Luis Suarez makes a spectacular move to Inter Miami. And I don't understand why he would bait that, because there is just – I've said it before. There is not enough ball to go around to appease Messi, Dembele, Suarez, Griezmann, and Neymar.
Mm-hmm. Not at all. Not at all. And, you know, it's – Suarez is not at the point where he needs to become an MLS. I mean, that really should be in the cards. Luis Suarez at this point. But, you know, I mean, not to segue out of that possibility, but, you know, is Suarez a player, though, that another big club in Europe is going to try and bring in? You know, is he at that point in his career anymore, or is he kind of beyond that? And a move to MLS where he could be a star player. I mean, he'd be a superstar player in MLS could be some relatively lucrative for him, you know, getting a little bit closer, you know, back on this side of the world. And there are a fair number of players from Uruguay that do play in MLS. So,
yeah,
it wouldn't be, I laughed at it, but now I think about it, it actually wouldn't be that much of an odd thing.
It would surprise me just given the timing and the feeling that he's
yeah.
got another year or two. But if Barca
yeah.
is feeling like, hey, the only way that we can get Neymar in to continue this thing along, because eventually Messi is going to start entering some sort of decline,
mm-hmm.
Would be that. So
yeah.
All right. Well,
we talked about
hour,
a lot today.
Yeah, the hour is upon us. I want to give a big shout out to Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. And on this Thanksgiving week, I am thankful for them for keeping us on the air for the last, as we go into the better part of our second year on the air doing this, finally starting to think like we got it right. Again, as always, I'm thankful to producer Paul for keeping the trains running on time. Sir, I hope that you and your lovely wife enjoy a great Thanksgiving down there in Florida, and go Birds. Producer Stead, thank you as always, and I'm thankful that we have been able to share this stage for the last little bit. So as we depart from this with our last couple of minutes, do you have anything that you want to be thankful for?
Yes, And I will actually, I'm going to speak more about what I'm most thankful for next Monday because it'll make more sense then. But as my usual parting shot, the game to look forward to next weekend will be Wolves Sheffield Sunday at 9. Hopefully they show that instead of Arsenal Norwich. That's a better game anyway. Wolves Sheffield, good game.
Well, we're on at 11:30, so that's where I will be on Saturday. So thank you very much to one and all, and I hope that all of you who are in the States enjoy a happy Thanksgiving. To those of you who may or may not be listening to internationally, happy Monday. This means nothing to you. Once again, I'm Mike Heastead, and this has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. We did all right this week. We'll do even better next week.